Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always fun to talk to our buddy KC Johnson, Bulls man from NBC Sports Chicago, and he joins us now on The Score Hotline. Hey, KC, how you doing?
What's going on, guys? How you doing?
Well, right. Congratulations. Your season is over. Always a difficult thing to see the end, but given the way things ended, I guess better to leave it on the floor in Miami than have to go to Boston and deal with that train wreck. I don't see how, if you can't get through the Heat without Jimmy, I don't see how you're getting through Boston, getting a game in Boston, getting within 40 in Boston. It was a really disappointing end to the season.
Yeah, I mean, organizationally, there was obviously the desire to get into the playoffs. That was their preseason publicly stated goal. And it would have, continued from their perspective, a nice storyline of overcoming that 5-14 start. I think the fact that they did not get into the playoffs, where obviously they would have been heavy, heavy, heavy underdogs under the Celtics. But I think just the way it ended with that, that was a very, very disappointing loss in Miami. I mean, they just did not come to play. They got completely outclassed. So I think that kind of intensified the response that we got from Arturis Karnišević on Saturday, which I thought was a strong one. An up and down season. You saw the up in the game against Atlanta, and you saw the down in the flat outing against Miami. It kind of encapsulated the whole season in the play-in tournament right there.
KC, I think I liked what AK said on Saturday. I didn't necessarily like the way he said it. I don't think you need to read from a script if you want to speak from the heart and talk to Bulls fans and tell them the state of the organization moving forward. I do think it was the first time that he said this group hasn't worked. I wonder, though, saying that and doing something about it are two very different things. How realistic is it to expect real change on that roster?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. I mean, and the two people I'm focused on are Zach LaVine and Lonzo Ball, because that's where, to me, you have wiggle room. Now, look, if he's as serious about enacting change, he's going to have to be open to other possibilities. But I would start with those two situations, because obviously I've reported, other people have reported that, trading Zach is going to remain an organizational priority and focus. And there was the thinking, closer to the trade deadline, that with him coming off of foot surgery and 3 years and $138 million left on that deal, you're going to need to see him play before you trade for him. But the league knows who he is, and if they get medical information and are comfortable with it, things happen in the playoffs where teams and franchises and owners and management get restless with what they've seen. So let's say Orlando flames out in the first round. Do they then maybe go, you know what, we need a veteran scorer. There's Zach LaVine. I mean, that's the kind of stuff and opportunity that you need to be ready to pounce upon. And then as far as Lonzo Ball is concerned, obviously they need to navigate the personal and business aspects to that situation simultaneously, because that is an opportunity, if he is not medically able to go, where you can get $21 million of salary cap and luxury tax relief. I mean, salary cap relief is kind of a moot point. They're going to be almost certainly an over-the-cap team, but $21 million off your luxury tax book would allow you more flexibility. Now, again, there's the human element where they're rooting for him internally to return, but those are the two areas I'd start. But, I mean, I'll throw out a crazy hypothetical and just to brace Bulls fans. I mean, and again, I want to make sure people, this is me speculating and hypothetical, but, like, if you're serious about enacting change, your three biggest positive assets right now are Alex Caruso, Kobe White, and Ayo Dosunmu. The last two, especially because of the contracts they're on. So if you are serious about enacting real change, you have to be open to a team calling and saying, hey, guess what? We'll take Zach LaVine off your hand, but we want Kobe White too, or we want Alex Caruso too. And you might have to make a painful decision on parting something you don't want to part with, just because it sets you up better for the future. So that's the kind of stuff that you have to be ready for this offseason.
And that's the most embittering kind of stuff to deal with as fans, because I think, you hear AK say that the group hasn't worked and we can't roll out the same team again, and then you're going to lose someone of value. It just it just kind of stinks that they're in this kind of a position. And, you know, they didn't have Zach or Lonzo really most of this year. So how is that different if they're not here to begin with? It's just, you know, I don't know. It just is so weird to hear the dichotomy of the two thoughts that you can't roll everyone out the same way and you got to look at it differently. And then you want to offer DeMar $80 million and it's not enough because he wants the third year. It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, the thing I would say about the roster is, like, when you're stuck in the middle, like the Bulls are, it's a painful exit from that. You can either just kind of keep plodding along with and staying, you know, 9, 10 and around 40, 41 wins, or you make some painful decisions. And that's what I'm trying to prepare people for. I mean, you either get lucky, like in a draft lottery with a generational talent, or you need to trade somebody you might not want to trade to try to extract it. And this is not a one off season fix either. I mean, this is a multi-tiered process where you're going to have to make significant change to pull yourself out of the middle. That's exactly where the Bulls are. So yeah, it's going to be a busy off season. It's going to be an interesting off season like it always is, but you know, gone are the days where it's Goran Dragic and Andre Drummond or Javon Carter and Torrey Craig. And that's it. I expect at least one, if not more, significant moves this offseason.
How significant was it that AK shared with everyone that the Bulls' policy about going into the luxury tax would be if he feels like the team is among the top four in the Eastern Conference? What did you make of that?
I mean, it's the most specific he's gotten, and, you know, it was nice that he shared that with us. I mean, that was, you know, off of a question about, you know, the organization's history with the tax and when would you feel comfortable, you know, presenting ownership with a reason to go into the tax, because, you know, if they are not able to trade Zach and Lonzo was on your books and you re-sign DeMar and Patrick Williams, which he's publicly stated he wants to do, you're a tax team. And they're clearly not top four team. So I read that as, like, you know, one of those four situations isn't happening. Either DeMar isn't re-signed, either Patrick isn't re-signed, or Zach is traded, or Lonzo is deemed medically not to be able to return. So, you know, again, this is going to be a long offseason. A lot of stuff's going to happen, but it was nice that he gave specificity to how he would present to ownership a luxury tax plan.
Any chance Oklahoma City wants to trade for Zach LaVine? I think they got more picks than anybody in the league moving forward here.
I'd be surprised by that one. I mean, you know, I would probably, if you're looking in speculation market, I'd, you know, focus on that one team I mentioned, Orlando. Detroit, you know, obviously had some interest in the deadline, although they're going through a executive overhaul. You know, I mean, another team to monitor in the playoffs, especially with Donovan Mitchell's future uncertain, is Cleveland. Again, a lot of speculation at this point. The playoffs are an idle time in terms of trade chatter because it's all about the basketball. But these are the teams you got to watch for. Philadelphia would be another one. I mean, what if they flame out? And, you know, that's a situation where they've got cap space. So then you could maybe even trade him into some cap space. Tobias Harris is always – future is always in question there. I mean, this is just going to be the fun speculative game until we get to – closer to the draft and free agency.
Help us understand the thinking with Patrick Williams coming off the injury, kind of a symbol of unfulfilled potential, high pick that hasn't really panned out. Why would the Bulls want to pay him what he's likely to want to, what he's going to demand if they are serious about moving on?
I don't think they're going to be willing to pay him what they offered him before last summer. And I think they're actually probably in a pretty good situation now because you've got a case where he is not only unproven, but coming off of another season ending surgery. So I think you're in the driver's seat in terms of you can let the market kind of decide what his worth is, make him get an offer sheet if he wants more, and then determine if you're going to match it or not. I mean, they tried to sign him to a long-term deal last offseason, and he turned it down because he wanted more money. And while he and his agent may still play that game, I don't think the league's going to play that game because I don't think the league has Patrick Williams valued that highly. And, you know, I asked Arturas that directly, and I knew he wouldn't answer it, but I said, what will be your strategy? Will you let Patrick, you know, market set and then make a determination, or will you proactively try to sign him? My guess is that they'll do the latter, but on completely on their terms, on a team-friendly contract. And then, like I said, if Patrick and his representative want a larger deal, they're going to have to go out and get an offer sheet. So, you know, he's their first pick. I do think that they still believe in him, given his D3 ability. I don't think he's ever going to be an all-star, but I think he's got, you know, potential in terms of 3-D. And look, they're really small without him, and he plays bigger than he is with his jumping ability and his length and his, you know, ability to block shots. So I see a future for him here. I just think it's got to be on their terms and at the right price.
So the next big date is May 12th. That's the draft lottery, and the Bulls right now would be picking 11th. They got a 9.4% chance for a top four pick and a 2% chance at number one. And by the way, there's no Wemby there. It's not like
there's not much there at all.
Well, that's what they say.
Well, there's me there, and I can be the Helen Thomas of the NBA draft. I'm back. Second year in a row, I'm starting a new streak. There was that long streak I had at Secaucus back when they had it. I basically had a hotel room reserved for me out there every year back in the post-Dynasty years. So, yeah, I mean, it's always a cool event. It's gimmicky, but it's fun, a lot of hope. The whole league comes to town for that, and then the combine. So, you know, what I've been told, and I've talked to a few scouts over the last couple of weeks, I mean – you hear this pretty consistently that you don't want a top 1, 2, 3, or 4 pick in this draft because you can really miss, but it does have value as you move through the draft and that there are rotational level and starting level players in there. So no generational talents, but it's always some value in the first round, and it's on Bulls and their staff to find that.
Casey, I might be in the minority here, but it seems very conflicting for me. I look at Billy Donovan, and I think he's a terrific coach still. And I look at what this Bulls team did without Zach LaVine, and, you know, in the final analysis, they won more games than they lost. Season ended in a huge disappointment. They were wildly inconsistent, and I didn't really like the way that AK presented the whole argument or began Saturday. So I understand the cynicism, but I don't feel like I'm all out on the Bulls because of Coby White and Io and maybe Billy Donovan. So I kind of don't know what direction. And I think depending on the day, you could talk me into either argument. Where are you on what Billy Donovan can do and where how confident you are that this roster will be one that could be potentially a top four Eastern Conference team next year?
Well, like I said, I personally think this is not a one-off season fix. I think this is a multi-tiered process. So I don't expect the Bulls to jump into the top four into next season. But I've said this before about Billy. I mean, he is as consistent of a personality as I've been around. Great communicator, not only to us, but to his players. You know, I don't think he's the major problem. Look, when a team underachieves or has the middling record that it has had for 2 years in a row, it's shared blame. It's on everybody. But I personally think Arturas took the right stance on Saturday, and he said he praised Billy Donovan. He praised his own staff that works for him. You have three players that are probably going to, you know, at least, well, the two of them are in the running for major postseason awards. That was announced yesterday in DeMar and Coby. And Alex Caruso is in the running for all defense. So you have three players in line for major postseason awards. This is on the roster. This is on roster construction. So you can be a good coach. You can be a bad coach. If you're given a roster that is guard heavy, size deprived, and doesn't shoot three pointers, I mean, how far are you going to go? So it's a shared blame situation. Is Billy perfect? No, he'll be the first one to tell you that. But I don't put Billy in terms of top three problems with this organization at all. So I think it starts with roster construction. I think Arturas owned that on Saturday, and now we're going to see how he and his staff react to that.
So I'm just kind of spitballing ideas. We were talking about this before, that Zach LaVine – you might have to eat some of that contract. You might have to, as you mentioned, give up something else to complete a trade. or you might have to do like treasure for trash kind of deal. Like, you know, one man's treasure is another man's trash. If some player isn't doing well somewhere, maybe you can get a deal with Zach where you're bringing someone in and hoping they turn it around. How do you handle that money aspect of the, of making a deal?
Well, the ideal scenario for the Bulls, and I thought Trae Young was going to be in the in that question, and I was glad it wasn't because I'm not a Trae Young fan, and
no,
I can't see the Bulls. I cannot see in any way or fashion the Bulls trading for Trae Young. He would completely curtail Kobe and Io, and just to me is not – I mean, people say that Zach, you know, the knock on Zach is that he isn't a winning player. Man, I mean, you multiply that times whatever for Trae Young. So – So I'm glad he was not in your question. As far as the money, I mean, your ideal scenario if you're the Bulls is what I mentioned before. You find a team that has interest in them that has cap space. I mean, the Sixers are the one that come to mind. And you know, this is, again, how you have to see how an offseason plays out and be ready to be nimble. What if the Sixers go after people in free agency and strike out? And then they're, you know, playing musical chairs and there's no chairs left and there's Zach LaVine and they flamed out in the playoffs and there's a two-time All-Star you can sell your fans and an elite score. The reason why that would be, you know, so such an ideal situation for the Bulls is that then you're not having to match salaries within 10%. So you could take less money back and help your books that way. So as far as the money, I mean, it is a lot, but look, how many times have we said there's a untradeable contract in the NBA and then the guy gets moved? So I know it's going to be a focus and we'll see if it gets done. I personally, I don't know, man, I've just been saying so long, this is headed for a divorce. And at the trade deadline, the thinking was this is going to have to wait a year because he's coming off surgery. I'm getting different vibes. I really think this is such a focus that this, I've, for some reason, have a weird feeling something's going to happen this offseason with Zach and the Bulls.
Speaking of tough contracts to move, Vooch still has 2 years and $40 million left, but does that make him untradeable, and might that be part of the bigger change that AK was alluding to on Saturday?
I've heard of no market for Vooch. I've never heard his name mentioned. I know that, you know, he's long been an AK favorite from the acquisition of Orlando to the proactive re-signing of him before he went to unrestricted free agency at a number that is palatable, but might not have been, you know, offered by another team. So I mean, AK said himself, I'm open to everything. So never rule out anything, but I personally would be significantly surprised if Nikola Vucevic is not back with the Bulls.
What about just generally speaking, their style of play? In other words, where the whole league is launching threes, the Bulls have sort of, partly because of the players on the roster, but they've taken a different approach.
Largely because of DeRozan,
well,
and if he comes
and if
back.
He comes, that's where I'm driving at. How do you change that?
Yeah, well, I'll say this. I mean, that was such an organizational focus last offseason. Obviously, the hiring of Peter Patton was celebrated and lauded, and it was all we heard during training camp. You know, I will say this in the Bulls' defense, because I heard this a lot internally in, you know, casual conversations. We've got Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, Patrick Williams, and Torrey Craig on the sideline. So you've got 4 3-point shooters at high volume on the sideline. Now, one you knew was going to be out all year. Two you did not in Zach and Patrick. And Torrey was in and out, but when he returned the second time, he was not right. He was playing limited minutes. He was not himself. So they envisioned Torrey making a much bigger impact, as they did Javon Carter. And I credit Io Desumu for that storyline snuffing out, because Io Desumu's play demanded his playing time. And Io Desumu shot a career high volume from three-point range, so he kind of offset the lack of the Javon Carter impact. But in terms of the other ones, I will say in the Bulls' sense, that's a lot of three-point shooting on the sidelines. But yes, it remains a problem and remains a math problem. And DeMar is not going to change, although he did actually take the highest volume three-point total of his career this year. But he's more obviously going to always operate in the mid-range. You can do both. I mean, if you think back to the start of 21-22, and I know people are tired of hearing about that, but DeMar was working his magic from the mid-range, and Lonzo was making it hum from all levels, including three-point range. So you can do both. It's on the Bulls to figure out how.
Great stuff, KC. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, KC.
All right, guys. Take it easy.